Well, it's time to discuss the big issues facing the world at the moment with the one and only Alex Selios from thebigsmoke.com.au. Alex, we're going to talk coffee tonight, and I think you're going to upset me, aren't you?
I'm going to really give you nightmares because instant coffee is back. It's cool. It's trendy. People are paying, you know, between $3 to $5 for one cup.
Where?
In America. So startups in America have actually revolutionized the whole concept around instant coffee, and they call it crystallized coffee. They say it's an upmarket version of what Nestle or International Roast do. Mm. And they're actually, you know, catching on, and they've raised a lot of capital to expand. And people are loving it. They're saying it's convenient, delicious. To me, it just sounds like a rebranding of what we've always known to be a low-quality product. But also, do you remember in the 80s, everybody was using that COPHA, you know, C-O-P-H-A of coconut fat, basically, and that's what they would put into things like chocolate crackles.
Yeah.
But now we buy coconut oil or coconut fat for $10, $15 a jar.
Yeah, okay. See, the problem I see with this is in America they drink bad coffee anyway. We all know that.
Yeah, they don't.
But so instant coffee, but what I don't get is $5 a cup. $5 a cup for espresso coffee or, you know, like a cappuccino in a restaurant is a stretch for me, I reckon, because I can make one at home for a lot less than that. But why would you go out and pay somebody to make you an instant coffee?
Well, that's the thing. They're not paying for the instant coffee and going out. It's still the same way as you and I consume it, which is a sachet that you take into work and you do it at your desk. So they're still doing it that way. The difference is they're paying the premium price for it. So instead of paying $5 for a kilo tin of coffee that would last you a long time, they're paying for the individual sachets.
I don't get it. Alex, I don't get it. I really don't. Look, something that I'm sure you agreed with long before these scientists got onto it, we care more about dogs than people.
So I've always thought to myself, you know, you don't want to be the person who humanizes the animals too much. But, you know, I think that I'm part of a growing community of people who realize how, you know, animals change our lives. There's a lot of statistics to back that up. You know, for example, people who live alone are 33% less likely to die early if they have a dog. We know a lot about dogs helping you with mental health, the lower the risk of heart disease, increasing overall joy levels. So it was no surprise that a study was done. It was a small data set of only 256 people. I like to mention that because whenever we talk about research, I think the data set is important in terms of credibility. Mm. The group of participants were shown four different news stories. Each of the news stories had the same result, which was the individual was beaten by a baseball bat by an unknown person and left with a broken leg.
Yeah.
Each of the stories had either a one-year-old human baby, a 30-year-old adult human as a victim, a puppy as the victim, or the six-year-old dog as a victim. Now, the puppy elicited the most empathy across all of the participants, followed closely by the baby, and then third, the six-year-old dog, and then finally the adult human. And I have a theory around this. The empathy levels for all three at the beginning were similar. So there wasn't a huge discrepancy between the puppy and the baby.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is about vulnerability. So I think the theory is people are very rarely seeing a baby walking in the street by themselves or crawling in the street, whatever babies do. I don't think it's common to think in your head, I have to rescue that baby.
Yeah, okay.
Usually have a guardian and a parent.
I kind of get that. So we think to ourselves, the 30-year-old adult can look after themselves. The baby is going to be with its parent, so the parent can look after the baby. A six-year-old dog can bite back, but a puppy can't do anything.
I think that's part of this. And so we tend to think to ourselves, in terms of, well, what would we do in that situation?
Yeah.
So also the other side to it is the adult can't only just, not only do they look after themselves, but also you question things like, were they in a fight? Are they involved in drugs? You know, you don't know the story.
Yeah.
You tend to think there's probably more to the story. Whereas you don't do that with a puppy or a baby. So that's what it is. So I think while the research says, you know, we like dogs more than people, I don't think it's a matter of humans not valuing humans. I think it's more about vulnerability. That's my take on the study.
Yeah, okay, that's fascinating. Now, it's always been believed that it takes 21 days to create a good habit and about 10,000 hours to become good at something. Apparently that's not true anymore.
So this is actually a theory that's been based on a 1993 study, which was based on a group of violinist students in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And they, on average, practice between 10,000 hours to 11,000 hours. And that's where the benchmark, on average, was that if you practice 10,000 hours, you become an expert at something. Now, the problem is that theory then was, you know, considered to be replicable across a lot of different industries and people.
Yep.
So you put the same benchmark against an athlete or a writer or a
musician, you know, for instance.
Chess player, yep. Right? Now, so you tend to think this. The problem with the theory is that it really is about also natural ability and an innate aptitude. So it's really about, is it that the 10,000 hours help you refine what you're good at, which could be music or art or sports, or does it make you a master? And I think that's the problem. And we know that with shows like Idol and X Factor and all of these shows, people come on and they say, I can sing, they sing and they're terrible, the judges hassle them, and they say, but I've been practicing for years, I've sung for years, how can that be? And I think that backs up this theory that it doesn't mean necessarily that doing 10,000 hours is going to achieve impossible mastery, just in the same way a great academic doesn't necessarily have the ability to take a cool idea to market.
Well, I guess it's the same theory about if they say, you know, if you're half an inch out when you're launching a rocket to the moon, you're going to miss it by 100 miles.
Yeah.
The same difference is if you're practicing for 10,000 hours the wrong way to do something, you're not going to get good at it.
And I think that's the problem with being told you just need to practice more. Practice makes perfect. You know, it promises glory. It promises the ability to become great at something. And you can spend your entire life trying to play guitar, and that doesn't mean you're going to be the next great guitarist. So I think it's
Well, trust me, I've been trying, yeah.
Yeah, having a bit of a more realistic perception, but also giving people a little bit of credit. You know, sometimes people are not great at something, but they have great passion for it.
Yeah.
So they might not be good at art, but they love to draw. And I think that we shouldn't be telling them that if you can't become a paid version of this, then you shouldn't be doing it. I think people should, you know, they shouldn't be undermined for what brings them joy.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's a similar theory that I have, that when, you know, governments implement policies, people think, well, you know, if there's a 10% loophole, well, don't bother doing it. So you ignore the 90% positive because there's a 10% negative. And I think that's a bit silly, but interesting research. Alex, always good to talk to you. We'll catch up again next week.
Thank you so much.
Alex Selios from thebigsmoke.com.au back with us next week on Australia by Night.